Hello, welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast. This is Paul Solentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. I have Associate Head Coach Sean Carter of the Wichita State University volleyball program. We're going to talk about Saturday's scrimmage and what life is like around the volleyball program. First, it is Sean Carter's birthday today. How old are you, Sean?
I turned 33 today.
33. All right. It is also Patrick Mahomes' birthday. It is my son Ben Solentrop's birthday. So we have three great Americans. It is your birthday today. Best birthday present you've received?
Chelsea gave me a pretty special card this morning. So I'd say that was my favorite most recently.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you give us any details about the card? It was just a sentimental.
It was just a heartfelt little nice message from her. So made me feel good.
Excellent. All right. Worst birthday present?
Oh, I don't know. My family's pretty good at gift giving. I honestly can't think of one present I haven't enjoyed.
All right, that was kind of a mean question, but I thought I'd give it a shot, see if I could dig out any bitterness.
My uncle did give me, my uncle Todd is, he's a pretty funny guy. I still remember I don't think I was even 10 yet, but he gave me his big scary looking gargoyle for my birthday. So I'd probably say that was the worst.
A gargoyle. Do you still have it?
I don't still have it.
Excellent. Birthday meal.
I used to love Italian food more than like anything else, but I'd say probably sushi lately. I'm a big fan of fish.
Okay. Where do you go for sushi here in Wichita?
That's a good question. Go to Wasabi. There's one place down by Kellogg. I forget the name, but that one's really good too. And then we go to Newport Grill a lot.
Oh, okay.
Just for fish and that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, great. Well, happy birthday. Thanks for joining us. Let's get to the volleyball. Shockers are in the midst of fall practices. Wichita State, 9-19 last season. They have 7 returning starters for the fall. I guess Emma Wright is still a little bit up in the air whether she'll be here in the spring. 7 other returners, 10 newcomers. Let's start with Saturday's scrimmage. The Black defeated the Yellow 3-2. How did it go? What did coaches get out of an event like that?
We were just, one, extremely excited that we were able to do the event just with everything that's going on. So it was great just for the girls to get out there, put the jerseys on. You can do as much practicing as you want, but there's no recreation of some fans in the stands and the, you know, just the adrenaline that gets excited to get to do something like that. So, one, that was awesome, too. We loved how competitive it was. When you look at the stats and break it all down, I mean, ultimately the difference in the match was just serving errors and a few attacking errors. As far as production from everybody, it was very even. The Black obviously did a great job. We kind of stacked the deck against the younger kids a little bit. We just wanted to see what they would look like. And then we added, you know, Cena and someone like Bryn, who's a newcomer, to that group, as well as Casey, to kind of make it as competitive as possible. And they definitely exceeded expectations.
Yeah. How did you set up the teams?
We maybe drafted like 20 different lineups. We were having fun with it. And then we just kind of decided let's just put some of the returners up against some of our freshmen as a group, because we think that freshman group eventually, you know, when eventually all these our older players are gone, will kind of be the future. And we thought after doing a few Zooms with our boosters and things like that, I forgot who it was, but someone had recollected a match where Lambeau had done something similar. And we thought it would be a good way to showcase the 9 newcomers we have, is putting them kind of all in one group.
Was there, when you told the team you were going to be doing this scrimmage, you're going to have fans, was there a noticeable boost to practice? Was that part of the process
here? Yeah, I'd say a little bit. I think every athlete, especially these college athletes in the times we're in, are just extra excited to get out in front of people, because it brings a little bit of normalcy to their very unnormal life and routine. So, yeah, our girls, I think, are always excited to get out there and play.
I guess at this point we should be clear. So fall schedule postponed, move back toward the spring. So that's the circumstances that the volleyball programs around the country are dealing with. Big takeaways as far as who was impressive on Saturday. Let me give you a few stats. Briley Kelly and Sophia Rowling each had 12 kills for the black. Cena had 16 kills for the yellow. Who stood out?
A few things stood out. The fact that there was two or three at least on each team that had over 10 kills, so that was great. So as far as offensive production there, we were pretty spread out, so setters were doing a good job and people were scoring. I think a few things that were of note is obviously our libero, big question mark, losing someone like Georgia, who's such an amazing volleyball talent, is how's that position going to look? And, you know, Lily having 27 digs was definitely eye-opening. I think that was one of the two things we were most excited about just right off the bat. And then obviously Morgan Weber being an outside hitter and being able to put up kind of libero-like defensive numbers when she's only back there three rotations is just something you get excited about, because not everybody has somebody that can be an outside hitter, do all the passing things that we need to have them do, score how we need them having to score, and then even get close to having 20 digs. So seeing that was definitely a big standout.
Yeah, I was going to ask about libero. As you said, Lily Lickway played libero for one of the teams. The newcomer, Bryn Stansbury, played libero on the other. On the other side, take us through that position and what it looks like at this point.
Yeah, I think at this moment, the person who ends up passing the best, so meaning the other team serves at us, who receives that contact the best, most consistently, will earn their right to be in the jersey. And I think, as you know, whoever's doing that is going to be the one that's going to get that opportunity. And then can you keep the digging numbers kind of where we need them to be? But that's really the big question mark for those guys, is who can be the most consistent at, you know, doing that job from a serve receiver standpoint. So that's really what we're looking for. And Lily and I think and Bryn are doing a great job. They're very focused on trying to get better. They both kind of have an attitude of it's never good enough, which I think is only going to continue to make them better. We just need some time and we need a lot of balls to be flying at them over the net until they get comfortable with it.
When I was at practice last week, Chris Lamb mentioned Cena playing some in that position, which I was not expecting. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Cena's a unique player just because she can do so many things well. And statistically early on, we just haven't been able to get her out of being a pin attacker or a hitter, just because every drill she's in, she's winning a lot. Her numbers are really, really good. But she also plays volleyball and sees the game like an elite old player. So that's obviously why we would investigate her being in that libero position. I absolutely think she could do it. Lily's going to be hard to catch as far as a digger and what she pursues. But Bryn and Cena both have the potential to, you know, keep pace there. It's really going to come down to who passes the best, and we're going to have to make some decisions on where we think Cena should be, but the door is wide open. It could be lots of different stuff for Cena.
Chris had mentioned Briley Kelly as someone who is having a nice fall. Tell me about her from your perspective.
Yeah, I think some kids, you know, everybody has to go into the weight room for the time that we require them, but there's always a few athletes that really make it a mission for them, because some of our feedback to her was, you know, you're not going to make that next jump or that next step of where you want to be until your strength and explosiveness improves. And she really is taking that seriously, where she's jumping higher than she's ever jumped before. She just looks more physical. She's hitting the ball at a faster pace than she ever has before. So I think that's bringing her confidence, and there's just sometimes she's dominating our gym. It's just, she's the best player in our gym as an attacker standpoint as anybody we've seen on a pin in a while. I haven't seen a pin attacker that as physical as her, as far as jumping off the ground and getting that much arm over the net, since, you know, Mikayla Roudsepp, and she was a pretty special player. So to compare Briley there, that's really exciting. And what we weren't expecting is how well she's doing as a digger and a passer. She's kind of just blowing our minds with us just kind of expecting her to be at this place maybe a year from now, not right now.
I guess it's probably different for different athletes, but you mentioned her getting in the weight room, really taking it seriously. What is it that clicks after maybe they've been here a year or two and they've seen where they can go, and then they see, well, here's what I need to do? Is it either they have to kind of discover that on their own, or is it something the coaches can really push them toward?
We can always suggest. I mean, coaching now, it's sometimes you almost feel more like a suggester. We obviously can be demanding, but when you demand and just too much all the time, it's just they get worn out. So the kids you don't have to motivate are the ones that eventually you're not going to catch, or other athletes aren't going to catch, that have exceptional talent. So when exceptional talent meets uncommon desire to want to get better, that's when I think you make a recipe for really good. I mean, I gave the little analogy to our team this morning of, do you see a difference between hardworking and competitive? And I gave an example that I saw a women's basketball coach at Duke talk about is, hey, if I put you on a line and tell you to run a certain amount of, hey, you have to touch this many lines in this amount of time, you know, I can make you work hard. But if I put two or three or four, you know, players next to you with the same constraints and then tell you to run, do you run differently? And my immediate thought was, yeah, I do, because there's this competitive component. And so I think the ones that really compete in that standpoint, just I don't have to motivate Briley to want to try hard. She wants this so badly that she behaves in a certain way to try to get herself there.
You mentioned freshman Morgan Weber. She had 13 kills and 22 digs. You talked about her versatile skill set. Tell us a little bit about her background and what her potential is.
She is from Iowa. She is from, you know, Pantherland, a rival we've had for quite a while. Her older sister, Bree, went to Northern Iowa and played for them and just was a nightmare having to deal with. And back when we started recruiting Morgan, you know, we were still in the Valley, and it was like, oh, we got to at least try it to get this girl, because I sure don't want to play Northern Iowa a whole bunch of times with that girl on that team. And for whatever reason, we kind of got to talking. She, I think, having seen us through watching her sister play, kind of attracted her to us and kind of went from there. But she's up from that area, was trained by kind of Northern Iowa coaches, and she plays that kind of volleyball. She's going to scrap. She's going to play defense like a libero, and she's going to compete like crazy. She's got an amazingly fun, bubbly personality. So I think that part is infectious. I think she's someone that girls like to be around. She just kind of brings a fun spirit to, you know, volleyball, and I think that's good. So she's gonna be as good as she wants to be, is my opinion.
Two other freshmen that maybe stood out Saturday, Mariah Buss had 12 kills, Morgan Stout, 11 kills, 5 blocks. Give us a little thumbnail on those two newcomers.
Mariah's just such a hard worker. So she wants to be really, really good. And you know, I saw a few things that I saw exactly what I saw when we were recruiting her, is she just is going to get a lot of volleyballs as far as sets, and she can handle a lot. And when the game gets tighter and the game gets closer, that's when she wants it more. She works hard for her approaches, and she's going to be someone that is going to score a lot of points for us. So I'm really happy that Mariah is here, and her passing is getting better. So Having someone like Morgan and Mariah coming in at the same class, those are maybe two of the best outside hitters we've ever had walk in the door at the same time. So I think them competing against each other for their whole career, and then add on top of that all the really, really good pin players that are older than them, if they just can stay in it, there's just an environment that's going to produce some really good players if they stay motivated.
Take us through the setter position.
Setters is, I hope that this doesn't put pressure on our setters, but the setters could, in my opinion, be the most critical piece to this team, either overachieving as far as expectations, wherever those end up being, or, keeping us at where we're at. I think they're focused. They are. Casey and Michaela are twice as good as they were at the same point last year. So to their credit, they're getting better. And Casey just looks settled in after a year. I think coming in as a true freshman is hard as a setter here. We put a lot on that position. So those two are really kind of carrying us. And Haley and Lauren Phillips are doing an amazing job of just learning, listening, and trying to keep up. And so Casey and Michaela are doing a great job, and it's our job as coaches to help them get better, because if we can make one of them or both of them pretty elite in comparison to our conference, that's what's going to put us right back up in the top two or three or winning the league again, is at that position.
With Casey, the improvement, what are you seeing?
One, just being more comfortable. So she's not as, like fish out of water, head seeming to spin of, oh man, this team's doing that kind of blocking thing. We're in this kind of play. It can just get kind of overwhelming of who I set when and this and that. She's just kind of letting her instincts and all of that take over. I stat our setters every day of, hey, I grade them on their decision they made and the location of where their set went. And by the end of Emily Hebert's career, she was in the high 90s of making the right decision, and she was in at least the low 90s to the mid 90s of set the ball into a good spot by the time she's done. So that's kind of my target. It's just the Emily Hebert stat that I'm grading these guys, and as they get better, it's going to improve our team's hitting. And right now they went from, in the 70s, maybe 60s of both those categories, and today they both were high 80s to, and Michaela was low 90s. So if they can do that repeatedly, our team's going to be better. They're doing a great job. We just got to keep pushing them to get a little bit better.
Obviously a weird fall. Take us through the fall practices and how you're structuring it to get the most out of this situation.
I think because we were so unsure, we weren't as rushed to, oh man, we got to find a lineup. So now there's a few individuals we really want to take the time to develop in a certain way. So we're spending time on that. I'd say that's the biggest change, but it's starting to get competitive here where we may be kind of at the end of our full practice days, to where we'll go back to 8 hours, and we're going to have a pretty good idea of what team we're going to put out there, come January or whenever, whatever exact date we start. So we're trying to settle people into certain jobs. But it's been good to just kind of let them out there and let's watch our group for a little bit. So we're not as rushed to like, oh my gosh, we got to put a product out there.
Is it like a spring typically in some ways?
Yeah, it's kind of, it feels like a spring when we get into our full segment, our 20-hour segment. So yeah, that's kind of what it feels like, but it's just, at least early on, there was always that we were expecting to play. So there was still that in-season intention of, oh man, we got a match we're preparing for soon enough. So when that went away, I have to admit I'm extremely excited and happy about how our group has handled that. I could have seen we take the season away. We're practicing at 7 a.m. It's not easy for a college kid. And then they could kind of pack it in a little bit. And our group has not done that at all. So they're working hard, and I'm proud of them for that.
some of the coaches that I've talked to have said to make the best out of a difficult situation, you're getting in more mental time because you're not so rushed with, you know, game preparation, travel, all those kind of things. So you try to take advantage of it in other ways. Any of that ring true for what the volleyball staff is able to do?
Me and Chris and Chelsea and Tori, I mean, to Tori's credit, she's now the second year as our GA and having to learn the program that she's had to learn. She's gotten really, really good at it. So, like, RJ used to do it, and RJ was, you know, one of the best people in the country, and Tori's gotten really good. And so her being as good as she is on that stat program, I film every practice, and then 15-20 minutes after practice, when that video downloads, we sync it up with Tori's stat program, and we can go through everybody's contact. So me and Chris have watched more video this fall on just our team, and then have been able to make little clips, send it to the girls, which some of them like it. So whether it pays off or not, our eyes are on our team way more often than they've been in the past. So I'm hoping that translates into some good stuff. But it's been cool being able to spend so much time of just worrying about how we're going to make our side of the net better and not really worrying about who the heck's over there and preparing for that.
We're getting close to November, which traditionally would have been signing date. I guess this just gets weirder and weirder for recruiting. You know, just in general, how are you recruiting now? I guess a lot of video?
Well, yeah. With the class we've had, it's just kind of a blessing because we're not in a dire need for a certain position. So we feel confident enough that we can sit and wait and just watch. So that's kind of what we're doing. I mean, we're talking to a few athletes. I mean, there's a foreign player that we're talking with and we're excited about, but that's really it, because this person that if we're bringing someone in is gonna have to be elite, or we have to know for sure that we think that person would be a starter. And right now our players are doing so good that we've just said, hey, we're gonna pump the brakes, and we're just recruiting from 2022 onwards, just because we've already heard, unfortunately, that there's some schools that if they bring back their seniors, they're not going to allow them to, you know, let freshmen sign NLIs, or if programs can, they're going to let them sign the seniors and their NLIs, which those institutions are at an advantage because they'll be able to have more people over the 12 amount of scholarship limit. But for us, we're lucky we don't have to be there right now. We can kind of wait, and honestly, we can just spend our time developing the athletes that we love that are on our team right now.
And how are you thinking about scheduling in the spring?
Chris has been, I don't think he's kind of worried about that. There's plenty of teams around here that he's talking with that will have opportunities to play. And there'll be some good ones. So there could be some Big 12 opponents in there. They're, you know, likely going to see Creighton. Him and Kirsten have a great relationship, and it's awesome that we can continue to play those guys if and whenever we need to. So there'll be a lot of good competition if and when we're allowed to play and do the non-con stuff. It's just everything's so up in the air with what these protocols have to be and what we're going to allow, where some are just, hey, you're going to do your conference only because we can control that protocol. And so there's more of that. But if we can get more, we'll have some opponents here in our gym, and we'll be going to play some good ones.
So it may look more regional then, and that's what I heard over the summer.
Yeah.
Was the way it was going, so more regional.
Yes.
And then fewer tournaments. So
it's likely going to be much, much fewer as far as the non-conference is concerned, and our conference season will be condensed most likely a bit. But from what it looks like, we're going to have more matches than we maybe thought we would have got.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos. No good. 1 second. It's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.